Have a potato.
You should say it about 5 times.
Just randomly throughout it 3. All right. Just every so often. We'll just use that. Instead of having the bump music, it'll just be you saying,
have a potato.
Train wreck, but
it's probably a train wreck. That's probably what this is. I don't think we've recovered yet from the rigors of 5 hours of steaming video.
I never said video.
Well, I don't care. It was no worse being steaming video than it would have been being steaming audio.
Could pretend like
we got up to 12 viewers at 14. One point. I wouldn't worry too much about it. You're having embarrassed yourself. Except for having done it at all.
So,
who are we? Why are we here?
Existential questions.
It is an existential question. It is. It is. It's existential Ken Hanke from the Mountain Express. And?
Justin Sowler. Nihilist.
I was hoping it would be nihilist. Okay. From the Mountain Express, also.
From the Mountain Express. I was watching Steve write all that up.
Well, he was being busy. I'm not sure what he was doing.
Drawing penises in the air.
Is that what that was?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I've never drawn penises in the air. Have I ever? Yes, I have. Okay. Never mind. Okay. Let's leave that alone. and let's further identify ourselves as the elitist bastards who have been to the movies.
We're also... Yeah, we already said Mount Express.
Yeah, we said Mount Express twice.
Good.
You've lost air. You've lost air in your head. It's obvious.
We'll have to say it again.
Mount Express. Okay. Now,
where are we? We're at the Cinema Lounge at the Carolina Asheville.
Actually, we're in the bar of the Cinema Lounge at the Carolina Asheville.
In the bar. Can't be in. I'm behind it.
You're behind it. I'm on the side of it. Steve's in front of it. We've got this bar covered. If it gets out of hand, we can handle it.
But where is the Carolina?
It's on Hendersonville Road.
Yes. That's there. True. Good.
You satisfied?
Yes.
Okay. Did you see anything this week?
Yeah, what did I watch?
I don't know.
Oh, Hall Pass.
Yeah, Hall Pass.
Which is the latest from the Farrellys. As if we needed such a thing.
Well, after the Heartbreak Kid, I thought they should have had their artistic license revoked. But.
Right, well... We have what they've tempered the raunch of Heartbreak Kid and try to be a bit classier. There's still lots of gross out gags.
It wouldn't take much after that Merkin peeing gag and
I never actually saw Heartbreak Kid.
Holy shit, it was bad. It offended me, and that's hard to do.
Well, did it text in front of you, was that one?
Yes, it texted in front
tweeted.
Of me. It tweeted, it twatted.
Yes.
It certainly twatted. Yes. Anyway, continue.
Where were we?
You were classing up from the Heartbreak Kid.
Yes. But it doesn't keep it from being penis joke, diarrhea joke.
Early John Waters is classier than the Heartbreak Kid.
Well, it's also better, I would assume.
That's true, yes. Mm-hmm, true.
But...
Dot, dot, dot.
The movie's not... It's not as awful as I had been led to believe. There's a few... I can count on one hand the times I laughed, which is more than some movies. Owen Wilson's in it in very ill-fitting clothes.
Big Mamas. There's a movie in which I didn't laugh.
Right. This one I laughed maybe 4 times, 3 times. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was also perplexed most of the movie why this even existed. But I think the thing is I don't get the impression that And I mentioned this in the review, that the Farrellys are stupid.
No, I don't think the Farrellys are stupid at all.
I think they've made stupid movies because it was wise of them to get a paycheck.
Well, that's true. And I think they've made at least two actually good movies.
Right.
And a third that might have been okay if they hadn't cast Jimmy Fallon.
But this one sometimes edges on not being too bad. But the material's just not there.
That's a breakout quote, I think. I can see that on the DVD cover now. Edges on not being too bad.
Right. And there was also this idea that... The impression I got from the film is that it's two guys making movies that don't fit in with what's popular right now. Making a movie about...
Guys who don't fit in with what's popular right now.
Yeah. And it might be giving them too much credit. And it's,
no, so. I don't. Probably not. You know, I mean, that wouldn't surprise me.
Right.
Because I do not think they are stupid. Shallow Hal and Stuck on You both indicate right. to me the work of people who are not stupid.
Right.
You know, so everything else, on the other hand, well, that's another story.
What's the premise of Hall Pass?
Hall Pass is about these two married guys who get. A reprieve from marriage by their wives so that they can stop talking about sex and just go have sex with whoever they want. And of course, them not being in their 20s anymore, it's not as easy as they think.
I don't know, I found it easier in my 40s than I did in my 20s, but that's another story and a pretty unwholesome one.
Maybe you should have made a movie.
Maybe
about
I should have,
instead.
But then again, maybe I shouldn't.
Maybe not.
Not on this subject.
So there.
That's how you.
That's
want
all
it.
I have to say about Hall Pass.
That's all he has to say.
What did you watch?
Well, it was an interesting array.
Oh, really?
Should I save the best till last?
Maybe, because I'm not going to agree that it's the best. Actually, it probably is the best. On sheer.
Have you seen it now?
Yes.
You didn't like it, did you?
The more I think about it, the less I like it.
Well, you're wrong.
Maybe you're wrong.
No, you're wrong. I can get two people to vouch for me.
Look at those two people, Ken.
Well, you look at them, I can't.
Exactly.
That'll please Jeremy. That's another use of putting on the Ritz. Thing from the 1927 recording. Maybe it's 29. Anyway, it's really old. Well, let's get Casino Jack out of the way first, shall we?
Sounds like a sex move.
Your mind just never runs
just
into
saying,
any other channel. That's what this is all about.
You gave me the old Casino Jack.
Go around the corner here. I'll give you the old Casino Jack.
What is the Casino Jack?
I have no idea.
Is it as interesting as that sounds?
No.
Okay.
No, it's not. It's an attempt. You know, we've already had one movie this year about Jack Abramoff that no one saw.
Right.
So now we're having the second movie that no one will see, starring Kevin Spacey. And what they have done is they have tried to turn the story into a comedy, which could conceivably be done and be a really dark comedy, but they don't have any idea how to do this.
Right.
So instead people yell obscenities at each other for an hour and a half. And then they kind of try to whitewash the man by essentially saying that he's no worse and perhaps better than George W. Bush and John McCain and Tom DeLay and all the people that he shelled out money to over the years as a lobbyist. And maybe he's not, but that doesn't make him likable.
Right.
And the whole thing is just, it's flatly directed, it's flatly lit. I'm sorry, it was the guy's last film. He died before it opened. It's no better than his last bad film.
What's his last bad film?
Factory Girl.
Oh, okay.
You know, a film that people stayed away from in droves. And rightly so. Rightly so. So, you know, it's just... No. Spacey's very good in it, and I don't even particularly like Kevin Spacey, so... That's a, you know...
That's not exactly a likable actor.
No, he's not, you know. But he hasn't been, you know... It's like I said in the review, you know, he may be all the world to the English theater, but as far as a movie star is concerned, when's the last time anybody gave a damn about Kevin Spacey? 1999? I'm going to stretch a point, say K-Pax, which is a movie that still sounds like a laxative to me.
Now who's filthy-minded?
No, it's just constipated-minded. That's different. So anyway, I can't say that I don't even want to think what goes on in this man's head. So I can't say I recommend it. I do have a recommend Rabbit Hole, which appears on the surface to be nothing more than high-toned drama of parents grieving over a dead child, which essentially it is. However, it is not sentimental. It's not schmaltzy. It's extremely well acted. And if you think of it in terms of what's going on in other John Cameron Mitchell films as opposed to how outrageous they are, it's really not that out of line with the other movies. It still has that humanity. It still has people who have lost, or in the case of other films, have never found their place in the world, trying to find some kind of normalcy, or what they think is normalcy. The performances are excellent. Nicole Kidman, I wouldn't have been upset if she'd gotten the Oscar over Natalie Portman, although I knew it wasn't going to happen.
Right.
Aaron Eckhart's very good. Sandra Oh is very good. And this kid, whose name I am forgetting right now, I think it might be Miles Teller, who plays the poor teenage bastard who accidentally ran over their child, with whom she develops a really weird relationship. It's very good. I think that I really can't fault the film. But it is going to come back to, it depends on whether or not you want to go see a movie about parents grieving over a dead child. So, you know, no matter how good it is, it's going to have that as a problem, I think. That and the fact that, you know, it didn't get any of the awards they were hoping to get.
Right.
And I think that's going to hurt it.
Well, it hasn't really set the box office on
fire. No, it has not set the box office on fire yet. I think, you know, comparatively speaking, Hedwig and Short Bus probably have more set the box office on fire, which is kind of ironic because this is John Cameron Mitchell's bid for a mainstream film. And I think he got more attention and more box office out of a film that had hardcore porn in it.
Well,
which may or may not prove what the audience really wants. All right, so then there is best film of 2011 so far. Now, can you really argue that point?
I'm trying to think of what's come out.
Not much.
Let me look later. I'll get back to you.
The Green Hornet is about the only thing I can think of that might be.
Probably enjoyed The Green Hornet more.
Really?
Yes.
You're wrong. We are, of course, arguing about Drive Angry 3D, which I think is a trash masterpiece.
Which I think is about half an hour too long.
You're wrong. What did I tell you? You're just wrong.
There's no reason for that movie to be 2 hours long. You put it an hour and a half, I would agree with you, but
I was never bored.
I was.
I was never bored. I was entertained the entire time. I don't really know what else I could expect from that film. I liked the one-liners. I liked the devil cult. I think it probably is a really good depiction of what a devil cult really is like. You know, there's a bunch of dumb rednecks who take off their clothes and they shouldn't, who are going to stand around on an empty field. And
Steve, is this true of devil cults?
Yeah.
Steve is agreeing that that is a good depiction of devil cults, yes.
Steve is an expert.
He is.
He's published three books on devil cults.
On devil cults, that's true. Where is what's-his-name when you need him? Joshua P. Warren. I couldn't think of his name. Joshua P. Warren could set us straight on this. Where is he? He's not around.
He should descend from the rafters.
It would be kind of cool if he did, actually. So, no, I just mean, I thought it was...
Devil cults. I thought you said devil cake cults. I don't know anything about devil cults. Sorry.
Liar.
He's a diabetic.
So in any case, here we have a film that Mr. Souther and I are completely at odds on. Well, maybe not completely, since if it was 90 minutes, he would agree with me, but at 107 minutes, he doesn't agree with me.
It was longer than that, wasn't it?
No.
We had an hour and 54 minutes on our...
Well, I don't think it's that long.
Maybe
I'm wrong. It didn't seem that long to me. I also thought the 3D was excellent.
It was 3D. It's...
It's still much better lit 3D than most 3D.
It's better, but it uses the same gimmick. It's, hey, somebody gets shot.
Yes, but he's learned something this time.
Okay.
If you throw it at the camera in normal motion, it's wasted.
Right.
This time, anything that comes at you doesn't come at you so fast that it's just a blur.
There's only so much of that before it's like, okay, we've seen this effect.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, it's a gimmick, and it's a gimmick movie.
Right.
I mean, that's what I expect. But then again, you know, I told you this movie was probably too much like Shoot 'Em Up for your taste.
Right.
Except Shoot 'Em Up is a lot shorter.
Yes.
In fact, I don't think Shoot 'Em Up weighs in past much about 80 minutes.
My thing with Shoot 'Em Up was that I didn't like how...
CGI'd the blood was.
Not just that. I didn't think he could direct an action scene very well. One of my things with Drive Angry is that I don't remember... There's nothing memorable about the action scenes. I remember where they take place. I don't remember anything about them.
Oh, now, wait a minute. You're going to tell me that William Fichtner sliding to That's the Way, I Like It, on top of a hydrogen truck that's turned over on its side and being completely blasé about the whole thing is not memorable?
Because I fell asleep at that point. And I know I usually...
Yeah, but you fall asleep in everything.
Here's the difference. I fell asleep twice in that movie. Beyond my normal one time.
Well.
It got me a second time.
No, I suspect there are... I believe there are mitigating circumstances.
This was my day off. I slept in. Still. Tell me to sleep.
Well, you're still wrong.
I'm putting this movie up against Rodriguez's stuff. And the Crank movies, and I don't think...
I think it's been on the same level, frankly.
I don't think they're as clever.
I think it has a much better ending than Machete does. And I loved Machete. But I thought the ending on Machete was weak. I didn't think the ending on this was weak.
Like the ending of Drive Angry to a point. I like when it actually ended. When it's just him and the accountant.
Yeah.
And he's drinking beer out of the skull. But that whole action scene leading up to it, it's like, why do we have all this suspense with, you see the gun sitting there, you know where this is headed, and
I was satisfied with where it headed.
They sit there and chit-chat the whole movie. I don't want them to chit-chat. One-liners and stuff blowing up. And it didn't do that. I thought it was boring. Ken loved it.
So. I loved it. I'll buy it immediately when it comes out, especially now that Justin's
now
so wrong
it
about it. Yeah, because now I feel defensive about it.
Allowed.
You know, how can you not like a film? What does the woman say? Do you remember?
Which part?
The one that he was having sex with when they break in.
At what point?
When the cops find her and she's huddled in a corner.
Oh, I don't remember.
It's pretty good. But I mean, Billy Burke's assessment of the situation, well, that went to shit in a hurry. I thought that was wonderful.
No, I liked the movie to a point, and then it just wanders around too much. Like, you could just tighten it up and it would have been fine. That's my thing. I don't want to be bored with a movie like that, and I was.
I never was, so, you know. This is just divergence of opinion, and you're wrong.
I'm fine, I'll be wrong.
Okay.
I'm not gonna have to watch it again, so.
So what are we doing Thursday evening?
I don't know. Do we have plans?
I think so.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I might not show up. You might not let me show up anymore.
No, I'm just mildly annoyed with you. I'll get over it. Or I'll get back at you one, but it won't be that way.
I'm sure you'll... I've done enough for you over the years. You can look past it this one time.
We'll think about that.
Okay.
We'll work out on balance who's done how much for whom.
That's true. I did get you that cheer wine.
That's true. So. You did get me the cheer wine. So, you know, that earns you a higher spot in heaven, but I'm not sure it does a damn thing for you on earth. Anyway, let's get back to the matter at hand. I'm no longer parched. That's true. You're an excellent Gunga Din. And Gunga Din didn't even bring cheer wine. Little fuck just brought water.
Anyhow,
yes.
What are we doing Thursday? Thursday Horror Picture Show.
Thursday Horror Picture 8. Show. At 8. Where?
The Lounge.
Yes.
Carolina.
That's right.
Is that it?
Is that all he wants out of us?
Well, okay. We need to tell him what movie.
Oh, the movie is James Whale's The Old Dark House, which is one of my personal favorites. It's as I said in the Express, it's, you know, it's locked in a perpetual grudge match with Bride of Frankenstein for my favorite James Whale film. Yours, I think, is The Invisible Man. But,
yes.
What can I say? He's wrong yet again. No.
Just be happy I'll like Whale.
We wouldn't still be having this conversation if you didn't like Whale. There are deal breakers, you know. Drive Angry 3D is probably not one of them.
On your list of priorities.
Even though you're wrong.
What is The Old Dark House? Tell us about it.
What do you think it is? It's an old dark house.
Yeah.
It's travelers in Wales, in the Welsh mountains, cut off by a landslide during
Wales
a storm.
Not in Wales with an H.
No, not in Wales. No, not like Jonah Ann. Wales as in that country the country with leaks and a shortage of vowels. They love the letter L.
Is there a lack of roofers?
Yes.
They have leaks.
Have you got a gun? So anyway, they take shelter in the old dark house of the title, which has a really bizarre collection of humanity. The door is opened by Boris Karloff as a more or less mute butler who says something like prompting Melvin Douglas to say even Welsh ought not to sound like that. There's an inhospitable old woman who is actually in charge of the place, Eva Moore, who immediately apprises them of the fact that they can't stay there, and that if they do stay there they can't have beds. There's a prissy old man, her brother Horace Fim, who pretty much steals the picture, wouldn't you say? You know, I mean, he's a preposterous delight. It's played by Ernest Thesiger, whom people mostly know probably from Bride of Frankenstein as Dr. Pretorius. And this is pretty much a dry run for that. He's the same, you know, supercilious, condescending old queen. I mean, you know, in real life, the man was known as the stitching bitch for his needlework that he did, and this was what his, you know, his friends called him. And he's good at sneering. You know, I mean, and he can turn any line, as evidence with "have a potato," into, you know, comic gold. I mean, it's like he's absolutely perfect with things like they're all gathered around at one point, and I think Charles Laughton says, "Here we are, X number of people. We've been talking comfortably for 2 hours, and still none of us knows anything about the other." And Ernest Thesiger goes, "How reassuring." You know, it's just it's that sort of tone. He brings it to the entire film. And it's really a great film, and it's a great film that we didn't have for a number of years. It was considered lost from about 1952 until about 1970. It was one of those things that you read about in monster magazines, but you never saw, and you didn't know why, because monster magazines don't tell you anything. They just, you know, oh, there's some stills from The Old Dark House. We're not going to bother telling you can't see it, but, you know, you couldn't. And it's kind of amazing that now, you know, you can. So, come out. Come here. Take advantage. You have anything to add? He's shaking his head. You can't see that on here. You need to be more vocal. Even when you're wrong.
I was vocal.
And wrong. So, on Tuesday, also at 8 o'clock, I believe. Is it not at 8 o'clock? And is it not in the Cinema Lounge?
I guess.
And is it not at the Carolina?
No.
Oh. It's not?
I mean, it is at the Carolina.
Yes, it is.
Yes, well, you said it's not. Is it
well,
not?
It is. It is at the Carolina. Nonetheless, that's where it is. And it's the Asheville Film Society, and we are presenting the original, not that pretentious, tarted up, overly, we talk about overlong, remake. We're showing
Most
you the 1960, this is true, the 1967 Casino Royale.
I would agree that this one's overlong.
Yes, it is. But I also think that it would not bother you as much if you understood all of the guest star bits and things like that. I think this is a movie that you really almost does come under the heading of you had to be there. There are so many things. It's like I started breaking down one of the gags in it. First off, towards the end in the big cowboy and Indian fight at Casino Royale, which had no script.
Okay.
You have to recognize who George Raft is. You have to recognize that George Raft became famous by flipping a quarter in Scarface. You have to have seen The Silencers to realize this whole gag about a gun that shoots backwards. And you have to realize that the guy at the end of the bar is supposed to be David McCallum as Ilya Kuryakin in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. That's a hell of a lot to expect from an audience 40-odd years later.
Good thing we're showing it.
Yeah. You know, and I think it really is an amazing artifact of that era.
My problem the first time I saw it wasn't so much that I didn't get the references. It's just that it's a movie that...
The setup takes too long.
Yeah.
But the setup doesn't really seem to take that long if you're kind of like in on the joke that... I mean, the Deborah Carr section, I think, is really what you're objecting to. The stuff in the Scottish castle.
Is that with the lions?
Yeah. No, that's the very beginning is the lions.
I remember that taking too long.
It's not that long.
Maybe it may not seem it.
There are a number of films I've seen over the years that seemed too long to me the first time I saw them.
Right.
And once I knew where they were going, they didn't seem long to me anymore. I guess it's... I'm really weird in that one, but weird in a lot of ways. But I'm really weird in that I really tend to like movies better the second time, and I really don't... If there was some way that I could start out by seeing a movie the second time, I probably would.
So you're saying you want to see Big Mama's?
No, I'm not going that far. Anything worth seeing, though. But I think, really prefer movies a second time if they're worth seeing at all. But I mean, unless you really understand that the Deborah Carr stuff in Scotland, that this is so not Deborah Carr. This is so not what Deborah Carr was about. Do you even recognize Deborah Carr? Do you recognize William Holden or Charles Boyer? You know, I mean, these people are not, you know, in 1967, you knew who all these people were. You know, now, not so much. I'm not even sure if now people know who David Niven is.
I want to try something. Can you tell me what the plot of Casino Royale is?
I don't remember. Is there really a plot?
There's a plot. Do you want a plot?
I want to hear Justin if he can. What he can remember.
I remember Woody Allen shows up at the end, and there's a bunch of James Bonds. And Peter Sellers is there.
Yeah.
He's got a hairy back.
That's only in that one scene. He remembers the hairy. That back is pretty phenomenally hairy, though. In fact, it's scary. It's frighteningly hairy. I'd make
Why
it
didn't
shave.
You tell me the plot of Casino Royale?
Okay, the plot of Casino Royale is that someone, and they don't know whom, but it's being backed by Le Chiff, who of course turns out to be Orson Welles, is depleting MI5, KGB, the French Secret Service, and the FBI, which probably means that they're also depleting the CIA. Anyway, and they try to get... It turns out that James Bond, as we know him, is a pretender that they hired when the original Sir James Bond, who is David Niven, went into retirement because they needed somebody with the name. So they bring him out of retirement to deal with this situation. And the way he deals with the situation is, for starters, he changes everybody's name to James Bond 007 so the enemy has no idea which way to turn. And then he has super rich spy Vesper Lind, which is Ursula Andress, hire an expert on Baccarat, Evelyn Trimble, who is Peter Sellers, who then becomes another of the James Bonds, to play Baccarat against the Chief and ruin him so that he'll be killed by his own men. And that much is the plot up to a point, which is then followed by the fact that who kills Le Chief. And then we find out that everything is a setup for a plan of world domination by Dr. Noah.
Right.
Yeah, that's pretty straightforward.
Okay. And Woody Allen's in it.
Lots of people.
There are a lot of people.
Orson Welles.
Yeah, Orson Welles is in it. Dahlia Lavi's in it. Barbara Boucher, Jacqueline Bisset as Jackie Bisset is in it. You got naked girls painted gold. You got gags involving contact cold medicine. You got gags involving an Ajax laundry commercial. You got gags involving put a tiger in your tank, which was an old Mobil Oil advertising thing. You know, I mean, and this is, I think, part of the problem with the film is that nobody knows this stuff anymore. You know, I do, because I'm ancient. But that's the only reason why. But come be ancient with me, or, you know, see if you can go along with the vibe and enjoy the Burt Bacharach soundtrack and the fact that they've got money, and they've just spent it like crazy on this. The film is huge. It's gargantuan for no good reason except they've got this money to spend. The whole Mata Bonds dance thing is absolutely pointless. It has no place in the film, but it's big and it's pretty and it's well photographed. You know, I mean, it seems to be just an out of control movie. I appreciate that.
I don't have a problem with that. What opens this week? We have Casino Jack and
Casino Jack and Rabbit Hole open this week. We've already kind of discussed them. So there is, in alphabetical order, we have the Adjustment Bureau.
Right.
Which might be good.
Well, it's based on a Philip K. Dick story, which Hollywood's track record with Dick has not been good.
A problem with Dick not being good?
Well, Hollywood. Hasn't handled Dick well.
Oh, well, that's probably true.
I think we make Steve chuckle with the worst.
Steve is easy. With the easiest Dick jokes you can come up with, Steve will laugh. He's sitting over there chewing the end off his pen.
But it looks...
That's very phallic, by the way. It's very narrow phallic, but it's still very phallic, having that dangling from your lips.
I think we're due for a good science fiction film.
Well, it's got a nice cast.
Yeah.
It's got Matt Damon. It's got Emily Blunt. It's got apparently one of the big guys controlling destiny is Terrence Stamp. I mean, that's got to help.
And I keep thinking of the one review I saw where somebody was saying this isn't the movie that you think it's going to be. Just sort of interesting.
So the Adjustment Bureau is maybe to be looked forward to. The wild card is the director.
Right.
Because he's never directed before, and although he did work on... He's one of three writers on the Bourne Ultimatum. He's also the writer of Timeline. And Ocean's 12, the least effective of the three Ocean's pictures. So, could go either way here.
This is true.
And then there is Beastly, which I'm sure will be.
Or at least Ghastly.
I'm thinking cosmically god-awful is probably going to be nearer the mark.
Title.
What's that?
It's too long of a title.
It'll fit on a marquee. Cosmically god-awful. You know, I mean, the only thing about it is that I like the fact that the witch who turns him into this Beauty and the Beast so that he can learn the error of his ways and can only be set free when someone can see through the ugliness of him and find his inner beauty, and then he can be turned back into pretty Alex Pettifer, is played by Mary-Kate Olsen. I think that's a great casting move. And damn, does that woman got a weird-shaped head. I mean, she's ready to play the Metaluna mutant in this island Earth. Trust me on this. If you don't know what this island Earth is, go look up the Metaluna Mutant. You'll see.
Or watch the Mystery Science Theater movie.
No, don't do that. I abominate Mystery Science Theater. And no film is bad enough to deserve that treatment.
Oh, I beg to differ.
Oh, no.
Even Danger Diabolique.
No, even that is not bad enough to deserve that. What's next alphabetically is Rango, which I'm interested in because the cast is kind of amazing, even if it is mostly a voice cast. I know that Johnny Depp is also motion captured, but I don't know if the rest of them are. I'm unclear on that. Gore Verbinski has not made a film that I didn't like since 2002 with The Ring. I liked The Ring. I like all three of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies to one extent or another, and I think The Weatherman is an unsung little masterpiece that was, it's just one of those movies that you watch it and you go, that's great. Who was that made for? Because it's got no audience. Speaking of Nicolas Cage.
Yes.
And
having no audience.
Well, Drive Angry 3D sure had no audience. Yes. That was sad, too. Come on, you got to admit it's better than most of the things that are playing right now.
I can't even think of what's...
Romeo and Juliet. Big Mama.
Yeah.
Okay. And those movies are doing better than it? That's pathetic.
Well, they weren't charging an extra $3.
Well, that's true, but... Well, actually, Romeo and Juliet is in some places.
No, not some places. This is
Johnny Depp as a chameleon who wants to be a swashbuckling hero who gets his chance by being sheriff in a small town called Dirt. And I'll be curious to see what Gore Verbinski does with an animated film. I was certainly pleased by what Wes Anderson did with an animated film. So,
you feel like with Tim Burton?
Yeah, Tim Burton has been fine with animation. So, maybe Verbinski... I don't feel much of a stretch with Burton because it kind of started in animation. So,
Robert Zemeckis?
The Antichrist? No, I'm not going to talk about him. And
plans to give Ken a heart attack by the end of the...
Yeah, I think he does. Yeah, he really does. I mean, either that or he wants me to do him a damage before the end of the recording session here. And then we have Take Me Home
Tonight.
Maybe
nobody start the movie.
I could figure it out, maybe. And we have Take Me Home Tonight, which is falling to Justin to do. And what is it about?
Topher Grace.
Yeah.
Is some college-age loser who works at a Suncoast Video.
No, I think he's a graduate. I think he's graduated.
Okay.
That's still a stretch because Topher Grace should have probably graduated 10 years ago.
Well, I do like the fact that they have seemingly moved on from the high school coming-of-age film to the college graduate coming-of-age film, which to me seems a bit more accurate.
Okay. Now, in what alternative universe is Anna Faris Topher Grace's twin sister? Even fraternal twin.
Milkman, perhaps?
Maybe.
I don't know. I'm not a gynecologist.
Yeah.
I don't know how that stuff works.
There's a crack to be made here, but I'm not going to do it. I am far too tasteful to go where this is leading. That expression, I think he thinks I'm...
10 minutes ago, we were making Philip K. Dick jokes.
That's true.
And all of a sudden...
Yeah, well, whatever.
Up.
Anyway.
It looks like it's trying to hop onto the 80s nostalgia wagon about 6 years too late.
Well...
Which,
I guess. As I said, it is for people who miss Wang Chung and Duran Duran and...
You mean people that...
Men Without Hats and...
People that were never actually growing up in the 80s.
Yeah, but but as I say that, they're probably better than what's on MTV currently.
It's just a different flavor of the same... shitty thing, probably. But I would tend to agree it's a little more...
You know,
bad 80s music is a little bit more interesting.
Yeah.
Came after.
Even though it's particularly bad, it's just sort of there.
Well, then the 90s, I get
catchy.
Well, the 90s, it gets really obnoxious.
Well, I don't really know the 90s stuff, so, you know.
It gets pretty. Four Non Blondes. Rednecks. You remember Rednecks? Cotton Eye Joe.
Looks pretty memorable. It looks pretty lame to me.
I know, but lame is fine, better than Big Mama's. I'll take lame.
No, honey, you're getting it because you stuck me with Beastly.
Which looks
beastly.
Yeah.
Enough?
Yes.
I've had enough too. Okay. Who are you?
Justin Souther.
What do you work for? In this capacity.
Okay.
In this capacity. Who do you work for?
Mountain Express.
That's right. And I'm Ken Hankey, and I also work for the Mountain Express in a heavier capacity. In fact, I think I work for the Mountain Express probably about 10 hours a day most days. So that's neither here nor there, but...
If you work a little faster.
If I worked faster, that's true. But I don't, so there you go. And the Mountain Express are the fine folks who keep body and soul together for me and who bring us this this fine entertainment that is cohered by the absolutely adorable... Yes, I'm going to... Well, I'll do better than that. I'm going to chuck him under the chin. I have now chucked Steve Shanafelt, our coherer, producer, friend, compatriot, confidant. What else could he possibly be?
He's the B. Arthur to our other three women.
Are you saying he is the B. Arthur to my Rue McClanahan?
Yes.
I see.
Wow. Thanks.
Great. You realize that makes him Betty White and he's the only one who's still alive.
Yeah, so I guess you're not really qualified to be a Snow Giddy.
No.
I don't know. Probably weigh the same.
That may well be. In any case, that's it for us and our coherer and the Mountain Express and the Cinema Lounge, and we will probably be back next week unless somebody forcibly stops us. And it could happen.
So.
That would be nice.